going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Welcome to the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and once again, find myself talking about the beautiful game, the game of soccer, an outcome, though, that may or may not be beautiful for two football sides that people really love in this country. Obviously, the team of the country, the men's national team, and Toronto FC, the first MLS team from Canada. And the one that is most decorated, but both have had controversy in 2023. They're looking to end the summer session with a change. And that is what the man at the helm of the men's national team, John Herdman, is doing. Essentially, making a move. Not exactly a transfer, but a shift in roles. He will have a shift in coast as he comes to Toronto to be the manager of Toronto FC moving forward. And this has essentially been a bit of a trend for Herdman, where he levels up and takes over a program that needs a little bit of reno, a little bit of gut. The studs are there, but could need some tender love and care and some culture reset. And that's exactly what he has done and what he'll look to do for the Reds of Toronto. We got to go way back to 2011 when he was hired as the women's national team head coach. That was after the women finished last in their group at the World Cup. Set the stage for where the program was. In a year's time, he had changed things around so much that the women got a bronze medal in 2012, and that's really when the run of dominance for our women's national team started under Herdman. 2015, World Cup, hosted by us, finished first in their group, but lost to England in the quarterfinal, which was a disappointment at the time, which shows you how quickly the level of expectation changed under Herdman just in one World Cup cycle. 2016, they win bronze again at the Olympics, which at that point felt like a little bit of a disappointment, even though it meant sustained success. Didn't finish the job with the women's national team in terms of getting gold. That came under his assistant, Bev Priestman, but in 2018 was hired as the men's national team coach when that program was in a bit of disarray, looking to get them back to some level of respectability and potentially back into the World Cup. And that's exactly what he did. He took the program from 72nd in the world to 40th, the highest ranking we've ever had for a men's national team. Finished first in our qualifying group in CONCACAF, really had a run where they only lost twice in the span of 20 matches. And because of it, he became the first manager to lead a men and women's team to a World Cup. But at that World Cup, finished last in our group, which was a tough group, but we had no points at all to show for it, and the results have not come since. All that's come since is headlines on whether or not he's willing to take managerial roles elsewhere and how the players are unhappy with the setup and their compensation or lack thereof from Canada Soccer, how he, quite frankly, is upset with the level of investment, and so he goes to Toronto FC, MLSC, program who has spent. Now, if they're going to be willing to spend to the same level, given the lack of results for Toronto FC, who is in the midst of what I am describing as their worst season ever, because they have spent the most ever and have had dire results, taking us back to when they were an expansion franchise, will be quite the job for John Herdman. But ultimately, he gets what he wants. He is in club football, managing a side that's willing to spend money. It was not abroad. It was not in Europe, which some people thought would be the move for him. And quite frankly, in his grandmaster plan, still might be. But there's lots of work to be done at TFC. And quite frankly, he leaves lots of work to be done with the men's national team, even though he's taken it so far in such a short period of time. So the questions are, where do we go from here, both TFC and with the men's national team. And how did we get here? Both with those individual programs, but with the man linked between them, John Herdman. For answers to those questions, I catch up with the two people I trust when it is analyzing, discussing, and loving the game of soccer, especially in this country, Christian Jack and John Molinaro. So to start, we will talk to John Molinaro, founder of TFC Republic, and he jumps on with us now. Let's go deep. So, John, I'm sure you're not surprised that John Herdman is leading a different red squad at BMO Field, but how did we get here on both sides?
Well, I mean, from a TFC side, I mean, they've been quite poor, obviously, this year, right? And, you know, Bob Bradley was shown the door back in June. And, you know, that's a pretty big loss because he's a manager of some repute. And so, you know, this has been a long process in terms of finding a suitable replacement. And, you know, a lot of different candidates were interviewed. And John is someone who has always kind of talked about eventually getting into club football. And so, you know, I'm not terribly surprised that, you know, this was his landing spot. You know, from a Canadian soccer perspective, I think it was a long time in coming. I mean, John has kind of voiced his displeasure in the media about, you know, frustrations with, you know, the organization's financial situation and how, you know, I can remember after the CONCACAF Nations League final loss against the States saying, you know, we're not serious about winning a World Cup in 2026 because, you know, the organization hasn't figured out its financial situation and the crunch that it's in. So I think that's how we got to this point. I mean, it was, you know, in part John wanting to leave for, you know, a better opportunity, and also TFC in desperate need of finding someone who can revamp, you know, what is easily the worst sort of season in franchise history.
When this happened, I was like, is this neutral? Is this better for both parties? Is this potentially worse for both parties? Moving forward, and obviously the Canadian men's national team needs to find a new manager, and sure, who that selection will be will maybe tip the scales on how we view this. But is there a way to come out of this where both are better off?
I think so. I think for Canada, I think, you know, it just kind of ran its course. I mean, John was at the helm for 5 years, and that's really a long time. I mean, just off the top of my head, I think only Didier Deschamps with France is the only longer tenured, you know, manager on the men's side in international soccer. So all, you know, it's inevitable in international soccer that a manager moves on. And I think with John, it was just got to that point, right? I mean, he got them to the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. And, you know, I'm not sure there's much more that he could do aside from, you know, leading the team in 3 years' time at the World Cup on home soil. And for TFC, I mean, they're getting someone with a lot of name value, someone who knows the Canadian soccer landscape, and someone who has a track record of, you know, changing the culture of a team. You know, I can remember when he took over the men's national team, the program was in disarray, and he sort of totally transformed that team, both on the pitch and behind the scenes in terms of its culture. And I think that's something that TFC desperately needs right now too. So I think it could be a win-win for both sides.
Moving forward for the national team, what do they need? Certainly, you know, John was a part of player recruitment and getting big players to want to play for Canada, which has been historically sometimes a struggle. He was part of, at times necessarily, recruitment in terms of funding and finances, which is not always in a national team manager's job description. But also there was, you know, the distractions, whether it was the New Zealand rumors or his, you know, manner at the World Cup. In terms of the job description of what they need in a manager moving forward, what do you think that is?
Well, I think it's all those things that you mentioned. I don't think any of that is really going to stop. But I think if you're asking me like to diagnose it and triage it in terms of what is the immediate priority, you know, the job for whoever the new coaches be, I think it's settling the ship. You know, the team bowed out of the World Cup on the bank of three losses, you know, eliminated after two games. Since then, it hasn't fared much better. You know, it's poor showing at at the CONCACAF Gold Cup and losing to the United States in the CONCACAF Nations League. I think this team has to sort of get back to, you know, a clear tactical identity that it had in, under John during, you know, the World Cup qualifiers, and getting back to its winning ways and getting back to, you know, achieving on the pitch and forgetting all this stuff about what's going on off the pitch with the labor disputes and whatnot. Not that any of that's go away. And I don't mean to minimize it. Don't misunderstand me. That still stuff has to be stealth. That stuff still has to be dealt with. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's all about results. And since really, since the end of World Cup qualifying, the results haven't really been there in a consistent way for Canada. And I think whoever is the next manager has to get, has to return the team back to winning ways.
So let's go there in terms of who might be the next manager. And it's still obviously incredibly early in the process, and there really is no real time crunch at this point because of the lack of international friendlies on the schedule. But some would say the best part of this from a Canada soccer perspective is that the money owed to John Herdman is now off the books, and that it loses some things financially. In terms of profile and in terms of temperament, are there potential names that you think would be a real good fit?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Donovan, because, you know, we have to take into consideration the financial situation that the club is in too, right? I mean, that's going to limit somewhat who they're going to be able to go after. And I don't know. I think, you know, when I look at it, I think it's someone who has sort of experience in the international game, not someone who is, you know, coming from club soccer, someone who has a track record of an international game, of dealing with players on a camp-to-camp basis, right, rather than dealing with them on a day-to-day basis. And I think someone who just has a clear tactical plan of how he wants his team to play and, you know, how he plans to get the results flowing from there. So, you know, I think in the short term, keeping the faith with assistant coach Mauro Biello is the right decision because he's been embedded in the national team program for a long time. But I think someone like him, someone like a Canadian sort of soccer person who's been around the program for a long time and who really knows the landscape of Canadian soccer, for me, that would be someone who would be the ideal candidate, the profile of the manager that I think that they'd want to hire.
Talk about Herdman and his ability to build and set culture. He moves now to club football with a club whose culture, you know, has eroded over the last couple years. Club football and obviously being a national team manager is quite different. Some of the motivational tactics that you can rely on when you have players for a camp for a couple weeks or three games is quite different when you're talking to the same group for 30-plus fixtures over months and months and months. How do you think he'll be able to make that transition?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Donovan, and I think it's really important one to ask because it is quite differently, you know, two different worlds. You know, John is not a dumb guy. He's a pretty smart man, and I think he knows what he knows and he knows what he doesn't know. And so, you know, I suspect that he's going to surround himself with a staff who, you know, have had the experience of dealing with players on a day-to-day basis in club football. And look, it's a process, right? I don't think anyone expects him to come in and sort of hit it out of the park from day one and instantly click with all the players. It's going to take some time and some patience. And I think that's the key here. But again, just knowing John and the way he's kind of deals with players and the teams in a situation like that, I think he'll eventually get there. It'll just take some time for him to make the, to make the adaptation.
Will he have the benefit of that time? You're looking at a club who has spent more money, really, than they ever have historically and have had arguably worse results, which is not a good formula. You have a loyal fan base, but that loyalty has been really pushed over the last couple years. Will he have the benefit of time to get this right, given the level of investment and the lack of results?
Yeah, again, it's an interesting question. This is a pretty loyal fan base, but it's also one that's very demanding, right? And any sort of failure is met with, you know, a quick response. I'd like to think that he'd be given the time. I don't think you bring in someone like John Herdman, you know, lure him away from the national team just to let him go at the first sign of trouble, right? I think you're going to have to give him a little bit of a leash and a little bit of a runway to get things right. So maybe that's me being overly optimistic of the situation, but I just have to think that He's going to be given ample time, to set things straight and to put his sort of fingerprints on things.
In terms of turning things around, how much will change in manager be able to change things? When you look at the roster construction, when you look at some of the decisions made by Bill Manning, what ails this club? Because it can't surely just be tactics.
No, I think that it needs a culture change. I think there are too many players on this team who are passengers and who haven't been given their best and who aren't fully committed to the cause, whether that's, Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi, who, haven't lived up to their status as DPs. So it's going to be up to John to really sort of whip this team into shape and really get them, the players on board, and really change the culture of the side, one from, an underperforming team to a team that sort of blew everyone away, during their glory years from 2016 to 2019.
You mentioned the two DPs, where the conversation really often starts and ends with this side. Any chance they're still with the club moving forward? Should they be?
I think so. They're committed. They've signed long-term deals, so moving them isn't exactly easy, right? I'm not sure. Too many MLS clubs would want to pick up their hefty contracts. So if they were to move, it would have to be via transfer. And, it's probably easier to move Bernardeschi than it is Insigne, given their age, given their ages. But, I think for the time being, they're going to be here. Now, whether they'll be here in the long term and see out the full length of their deals, that's another sort of story entirely. I just think based on their current sort of form and the way that they've really had a negative influence on the culture of this team, wouldn't surprise me if they're gone, sometime.
Yeah, it is not necessarily the way that we thought we'd be talking about either national team at this point this year, but luckily, there's a chance to right the ship moving forward and still get some good results. Always a good result when we get to catch up with you. Thanks so much, pal.
You're welcome, Don. I'm anytime.
Thanks so much to John Molinaro. You can find him on X, or what we all still call it, Twitter. At John Molinaro is his handle. If you're looking for his work, you can find it from a freelance perspective at Sportsnet, CBC Sports. But most regularly, he's breaking down men's national team and TFC content for you at tfcrepublic.ca. The stories in terms of soccer in Canada aren't all negative. I mean, it hasn't been the best year for three MLS franchises. Our women crashed out of the World Cup earlier than anyone expected. And I mean, the men's national team is not even really playing friendlies and is now looking for a coach and looking for a way to resolve their labor issues with their men and women. I swear it's not all bad, because we've had an amazing season in the CPL. Essentially, half the league is tied atop the table, which will mean an amazing stretch drive to the postseason. A postseason with a new exciting format. We're going to talk about Herdman, TFC, all things Canadian men's national team after the break with KJ. We're also going to send you on your merry way with a bit more of a positive spin and talk a little bit of CPL, something that is overdue. Let's take a break.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
I've got great memories with that team. I think you go through highs and lows, as every coach does. It's been a challenging experience and time with that group, for reasons a lot out of their control, potentially even out of the control of the coaching team. A lot of impacts that you deal with that have got nothing to do with X's and O's, or positional selections, or unit relationships, or even coach-player relationships. There's been a lot of noise that you've had to deal with. And I think with all of those elements, that's where this team are at currently, coming out at the back of a World Cup with, labour disputes and, deals that are, individuals with deals that, challenge the culture. It's not been easy, there's no doubt. But at the same time, you know, we're leading a team to its First Nations League final. You know, this last year, we with what you would call a Canadian A team, we won three, lost one before the Nations League final, and competing against, you know, arguably the strongest US team that the US have ever produced. And the strongest Canadian team is still got to get better. So I think with all the agendas at play, and I think you're well aware in the media of many of the agendas that are at play in the Canadian soccer landscape, I can walk away there proud with many memories, with some great relationships still intact, and excited for the future of Canada soccer, who have a 2026 World Cup and so much to look forward to and get excited about. So this is someone else's time now, and excited for that person, whoever it may be.
It is the Going Deep podcast. We will go deep once again on all things Canada soccer and TFC, and we're going to sprinkle in some CPL as well. We have to when we have the Vice President of Media and Content for the CPL and a one soccer broadcaster. That is Christian Jack. Let's go deep with him. Joining me on the Going Deep podcast is a man who is in his happy place when he's either at a motor race with his children or in the stands watching the Atlanta Braves play baseball for some inexplicable reason. But luckily, he's willing to spend some of his disposable time, which is not frequent during the football season, to talk to me. Thanks, KJ, for doing this.
You know me very well, my friend. Great to spend some time with you again.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, naturally when there's a change in terms of roles at a club or a national team, you know, my first question to people embedded would be, are you surprised? But with this one, I know you couldn't be, because I sure wasn't. I don't think anyone is. I think the biggest question is, why is that the case? How did we get here?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a complicated story, but in many ways you can, I think, just simplify it by talking about sports. I mean, I think that's what sports is ultimately. Cycles come to a close, right? I mean, sports, that's just what happens. You know, you can win a trophy and a title in the city of Toronto and no longer be there, both Greg Vanney, you know, and Nick Nurse. So this is what happens. You know, you don't necessarily stick around for what you've done in the past consistently. And, you know, sports will consistently throw hurdles your way, whether that be on the field, whether that be within relationships, whether that be off the field, politics, whatever. And so, you know, that's the simplified way of explaining it, that ultimately it's been a run of, you know, over 5 years with a national team, which is, you know, well above average for a national team manager in this sport. And even though the contract was supposed to take him through hosting a World Cup in 2026, I think it was clear that he was looking to move on, and he's got his new job now in Toronto FC.
Well, I think to me that's the question is, is it this job? Is it Toronto FC and what that might mean, or just being a club manager, period, and getting into that side of the game? Or is it a job? Is it finding a dry landing spot? Because what Herdman has been able to do throughout his career is show up when there's a mess to clean up, which, you know, relative makes the person cleaning up, you know, look good. You can't look worse than what's already been there. So for you, is it the lore of this specific job, or just, you know, another rebuild that was available?
Yeah, I think more along the lines of a job. I think obviously he was looking to move on from Toronto, so from Canada, obviously, and Toronto FC presented that great opportunity. There's lots of factors here, right? The world of football is very big, but, you know, nowhere was his reputation higher than here in this country. And so if he wanted to move into the club game away from the national game, I think he would have always targeted a Major League Soccer job. It just happens to be this one that came available. I know that Vancouver has been something, having lived there for a long time, has probably always been captured his eye as well. And, you know, I think ultimately, as I said before in a different show, that, you know, this is where he people know him, right? So you can get that benefit of the doubt factor a little bit more. Your reputation is higher when you come in. There's not as many question marks. People can be potentially just a little bit more patient with you, and because they know what you've done for the country. While if you go into a different environment in a different country where that wasn't reported, and quite frankly, people might not even care less about it, you won't get that soft landing, so to speak, as you mentioned either.
You know, I was looking at the rumored candidates and I thought, man, Robo might be a good potential person to come in, understands the club, understands MLS. You know, Bobby would be a great story, you know, someone who's been raised in the sport in the country and understands the landscape. I'm a bit skeptical. I'm going to be honest. I don't know necessarily if some of the tactics that you can pull and lean on, if you are an international manager, when you have players for a couple games, a camp, a window, can really work in the same way when you're talking to a group, you know, for 30 plus fixtures over the course of quite a few months. Is there some change in the manager going to be necessary for this to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's an enormous job, buddy. You know, no doubt about it. I think you're right to have some of those questions. I think a lot of people will have those questions, and I think you'll probably address those questions head on. You know, I don't think he's the kind of person that will shy away from that. But ultimately, no one really knows, right? No one really knows until they give him the opportunity. And the people that you need to answer to are the people in the dressing room. You know, players ultimately will always be the ones who have the most power. And it's the same reason why he's moved on from Canada. Ultimately, there's lots of discussions about the reasons around it. But it is relationship building, and it is players and players asking for more and whether you can give them that and, you know, and wanting more from you. And this is now the task that he has at Toronto FC, where the roster construction has been abysmal, and they spend a ton of money and have underperformed significantly to the point of a laughing stock and an embarrassment. And he's got to turn that around, and he's got to prove to those players that he can do that on a daily basis. As you alluded to, it's one thing to have international camps September and October back to back, but then suddenly you don't have to see them again until March, and you can plan out your plans and decide on what you're going to do and bring in your theme days and your mission statements and have a, you know, a Chicago Bulls theme when you're in Chicago and all of those things that has been done and the swords and all those different things to galvanize a team. But when you're building on a team, you know, an MLS team, and you're working on, you know, games coming thick and fast, you've really got to show what you can do with that team on the pitch. And I think that's going to be where John Herdman, the coach, more than John Herdman, the manager, is going to have to step up and see if he can lead this team.
Well, an international manager has something that the players want. I have a plane ticket to this tournament. I have a spot in the starting 11. If you're a club manager, especially with players on big money, some of them you can't necessarily move in the same way. I look at the issues with the club, and you know, we've talked about culture quite a bit, but if you just were looking to pick a side talent-wise, and you mentioned the roster construction, there's some serious questions. How much of where they find themselves is on the managers, plural, and how much of it goes higher and goes to, you know, Bill Manning and the like?
Well, I think Bill Manning will be the first one to say that, you know, he has to take enormous responsibility for this. You know, they have, you know, decided to for whatever reason, give the keys to certain people, and it hasn't worked. And so, you know, ultimately, I look at the roster construction and think about the money that they've given to some players, how old the roster is, how, you know, the lack of Canadian talent that was really able to come through. And, you know, you think about Lucas McNaughton moving on and performing now is another example of that. Just Petretta coming in, who's on a ton of money at left back, that's not been a very good signing. So their recruitment has been really abysmal. And, you know, you have to be able to, I think, analyze your team better than anybody else. And when you look at their team and you look at the way they've analyzed these players, I think that they've had a misguided opinion on a lot of them for a long time. And then not only within your own squad, but then when it comes to recruitment, you know, in terms of some of the players that they brought in, hasn't been great. And, you know, the big one is obviously the two Italians, buddy. When obviously you look at the two Italians and they're not performing, that's a significant concern. And they're paid an enormous amount of money. It's an enormous risk when you do that anyway. And you have to get it right. You have to get it right. They have not always got it right in the past, but they did get it right with Bradley and Altidore and Giovinco, because not only were those players performing at a high level, they had the attitude and the desire to commit to the cause, and then the other players followed them. And they showed them the way. That these players are not doing that. So he's got an enormous problem with the culture within that dressing room with these players who are going to be very difficult to move on from.
Hey, talk about bringing players through. I'm watching Jacob Schaffelberg play week in, week out, put in performances. Like, man, TFC could use a player like that. Or they had him. Like, yeah. So you're either not developing or identifying the talent that's within your system. You talked about those DPs, and now, even though it's a ridiculous comp to make because he's still, you know, one of, if not the best player in the world and one of the best players ever, if not the best, people are looking around saying, well, look how Messi has dragged his team as a DP. What are you spending on yours? But there will be certainly a reevaluation on how efficient has this money been spent. Do they need to move on to their DPs for the better part of the club?
Well, yeah, in my opinion. But it'd be, you know, that becomes John Herdman's job now, right? That becomes his priority. What can they do? Can he find a way to magically get them to buy in? And, you know, maybe they will. You know, ultimately, they've been an enormous problem since they've come in, and it's not worked. But they are still professional footballers with a lot of pride. And at some point, you would hope that they can find a way to turn that around and believe that they can be part of this. So, you know, at the moment, they haven't shown anybody within that club and who I speak to, excuse me, to believe that they can do that. But that being said, they're on long-term contracts. They're not going to go anywhere unless you pay them out, which they can't really afford to do. And you can't pay out more than one anyway without it being an enormous problem on your cap. That he's got to try and get them to buy in. So he'll believe that he can do that. I'm sure that was one of the many things in the interview process when they asked him, how do we get these two to buy in? What are some of your ideas? He obviously sold that to the club, and now he's got to go show it.
Well, that's the big part of this too, is financial moving forward, because I think there is a belief that, you know, there are a bunch of blank checks just sitting around MLSC with, you know, TFC logos on them. I've never really understood the checks and balances in terms of how money is spent in that club and the return on investment, but you're willing to invest. I respect it and I rate it, but I have to imagine at some point that well runs dry, especially when the results aren't coming. You don't foresee this being a scenario where he could just pay for problems to go away, do you?
I don't know, and there's no way that you can do that within the salary cap league right now with those two albatrosses of a contract. But what he does have in his favor is there's still a lot of financial flexibility. There's a lot of players out of contract at the end of the season, and there will be an ability, if you can get Jason Hernandez connected with John Herdman to on the same page, the new general manager, who's I think a very smart individual, but is still learning on the job, that you can make you can make quite a few trades within the league. And I still think that, you know, where they are right now to where they can go isn't that far away. And what I mean by that is that they have underperformed to a laughing stock of an embarrassment right now. But ultimately, a lot of teams make the playoffs. And this time next year, the expectation should be, look, they're not going to win anything, and they shouldn't win anything within a year. But there's absolutely no reason why this team should not be back in the playoffs next year with some financial flexibility a little bit within some of the salary cap and with some of the players coming off contracts. But, you know, ultimately, that should never be the ultimate game for goal for the club. You know, ultimately, the play pays all this money, buddy. Like, ultimately, they should be contending and playing in big finals and competing like you've seen Messi do over the last few weeks.
The financial scenario for Canada Soccer is a little bit more acute, and you may argue that John Herdman moving on and that salary coming off the books might be the best thing moving forward in the short term. In terms of profile for the next manager, when you're filling out that job description, what do you think the intangibles that are going to be necessary for that individual and the organization to be successful?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it needs to be an authentic hire, not somebody that you're going to get a lot of publicity with or PR and try and win the battle of opinion. You know, forget the shop window stuff and start thinking about what the most important thing is. And that's not perception and what people care about. It's about winning games. So I think you've got to make sure you get a coach. I don't think this team needs a figurehead anymore. I think a coach with a good personality who's charismatic and handle a press conference and a microphone is always important, but it doesn't need to be the face. And John Herdman was the face of this organization the last 5 years. There's a lot of other players who can do that now. So I think straight away, I would think about that, an authentic hire, not one that you believe that you're just doing because people will be happy with it. It needs to be a coach, someone who can take these young players and make them better. And has the respect of the players. You know, ultimately, you look at these players now and you think of where they're playing and who they played under, you know, playing at Bayern Munich, you know, playing for top coaches the way that Alphonso Davies has done. And, you know, there's so many examples of it, right? Alistair Johnson had Ange Postecoglou and now he's got Brendan Rodgers. And, you know, there's tons of examples of these star players in Europe playing for top coaches that there's an expectation when they come back that you can help me get better. And how do you help us get better tactically in game management, improving everything? And I think that was, you know, I've been told that was a big problem at the end of the tenure with John. So, you know, there's been some challenges from some of these players to getting what they wanted from him. So, you know, I think that ultimately getting a coach who is a football coach is important. And the rest, I think, will take care of itself.
I just think about what you just said. Getting a coach that is a football coach is part of the job description. International experience. Important?
Yeah, I think important, but not essential. I would go with somebody, I think, who needs to understand the fabric of Canada and understand the margins in which they're working under, having respect for their employers rather than calling them out consistently on press conferences, which led to a lot of other turmoil behind the scenes that led players to think, if you can say what you want to say, I can say what I want to say, so to speak. So a true leader in that regard, not somebody who is just a renter international manager, if you know what I'm saying. Let's just bring him in because he's got international experience and he knows how to win at a world. He knows how to win games at a World Cup, and you know within 3 years he'll be gone, and we'll have to figure something else out. Somebody I think that can lay some foundations of pride in this country. So look, it may not be Canadian, but I'd like somebody who understands this country and has had some history there as well. And international experience doesn't always mean coaching in the international game. You know, coaching within CONCACAF, having an understanding of international games and the ability to play under pressure in different environments, I think is important as well.
You know, where the program is, you mentioned not necessarily has to be the face of it, but, you know, part of the task internationally has been, in this country, has been, you know, interacting with potential donors and raising money and things outside of just the thing about tactics and, you know, filling out a team sheet. Does this search for next manager have to be someone who's going to be rooted in this country 365 days a year?
Yeah, I would like to be. And just to say, not to do the things that you've just said, by the way, you know, as I said, you know, there's other people who are paid, who should be paid to do that stuff, you know, and, you know, the ability to raise money and all of that stuff comes with the protection of the organization. And, you know, a lot of this stuff over the last couple of years, and certainly since the winter, has been reported as Canada in turmoil and dysfunction and nearing bankruptcy. And a lot of it has been incredibly inaccurate. You know, they weren't able to sustain the financial output of $50 million over the last couple of years because they were spent that much in the prior 7 to 8 years. And, you know, okay, budgets were cut, but they needed to do that to manage the organization going forward a little bit. And I think that the coach needs to understand that when he comes in, he's working within a remit and he understands inside that what he can and what he cannot do. And I think that's more important. And the other stuff, the raising money and getting the awareness on Canada Soccer falls to other people away from that role. And hopefully the less negativity means that more, you know, organizations and sponsors and powerful people want to put their name behind this fantastic team again, because both the men and the women have got a very, very bright future, and tournaments coming up soon where hopefully more and more people can watch them again with Olympics and Copa America around the corner.
So when I'm thinking of whether it's a hot stove baseball trade or rumored compensation for an NFL player, we're talking about Jonathan Taylor now, or you know, rumors in terms of what's going on in the trade market in basketball, my first question is why? Why is this information out there? Like, who does this serve? How did it get out there? And what is the angle? What is the play in terms of evaluating maybe its credence and maybe what it may mean in the grander scheme? So I ask you, why was that information out there? Why was post-game, you know, press conference used to talk about, you know, being serious about winning, you know, World Cups? And why was the conversation about the amount of budget and compensation, you know, out there at that time? Why do you think that was out there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I guess only one person really knows that. I think at some point, what he wanted and what he didn't, what he wanted and what he received were very different. He obviously had a belief that he could get more from something that wasn't there. And I think that that was, when you couldn't get it internally, that was the way to try and ramp up the pressure externally, to try and make sure that there's more pressure put on that organization to be able to get what he wants. I think that might be the, you know, that might be my educated guess in terms of talking to people and why things started to leak out and why it started to not become just an internal conversation, is because ultimately things didn't go the way that, that, you know, that those individuals wanted them to.
I'm going to hit you with a why and a what next. And that's on what is going on in the CPL. Because every time I look at the table, there are more and more teams within striking distance at the top. You've got five teams above 30 points, really within 4 points of each other, all in pretty good form. So what is it about what we've seen this year that we've had so much parity? And more importantly, with the new, you know, postseason structure, what will that mean going forward?
Yeah, it's great for us, you know, great for Canadian soccer. And, you know, watching every game as I do and covering them, you know, these games are real games of meaning. And every game and every minute matters. It's almost like playoff games, atmospheres in regular season. So as you alluded to, you know, we've got our team in Calgary right now, 4 points clear. But then, you know, our team on Vancouver Island, in Ottawa, Halifax, Hamilton, and North Toronto and York, all within the 3 points, you know, all battling for that second spot all the way down to sixth. And the top five make the playoffs, obviously, with that tier system where, you know, if you get one, you get almost that bye into the semifinals, and there's knockout games between four and five. There's lots of information there. So, you know, in terms of how different it's going to be, and we're going to get that out there as a league. But my analysis on all of this is that because there's a regular season trophy now and a spot in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which is the Champions League for CONCACAF next season, and because of that has really ramped up the pressure on these players and these teams to perform every minute. And also because of how difficult the playoff format it is. Previously, it was, oh, let's just get in the top four, and it doesn't matter, one versus four, two versus three, two legs. No advantage, really, let's just get in the top four. And now, because every game matters, because they know that the difference between fifth and fourth and fourth and third and second and so on, it is making a real difference. And what we're getting is we're getting competitive football, we're getting goals, we're getting leads consistently being relinquished, which in football is the hardest thing to do. When you get a lead, genuinely, you get something out of it. This year, we've had more leads turned over already than we had in the entirety of last season. So it's really great to see. And I know you've been out to see a bunch of games and support it. So we really appreciate that as well, buddy. But if anyone's listening and is unsure about it, check out the Canadian Premier League. Come out and watch some games because it's fun.
Well, lastly, before I let you go, I mean, the aspect that I love is the games even matter for teams at the bottom of the table, because Valor and Vancouver, every game that you're in, you could play a bit of spoiler and smash and grab and steal some points. What game coming up do you think is one that people should definitely be tuned in on, because it will have huge implications?
Yeah, I mean, we almost every week we have big games, right? Which is fantastic. I'll just concentrate on this weekend alone. On Saturday night, Atletico Ottawa, they get fantastic crowds, over 6,000 every night, every Saturday night for their games against Cavalry. And Cavalry are top, and Ottawa want to be top. Ottawa were top last year, and Ottawa is Cavalry's bogey team. Cavalry cannot beat them. And they went there this year and had the ball most of the game and lost. And so this will be an interesting one, because if Atletico Ottawa, who are owned by Atletico Madrid, can find a way to win that game, then all of a sudden Cavalry are the leaders right now. They'll be clawing them back, and Ottawa think they can win it again, and the pressure will be on Cavalry. So keep an eye on that one, and as usual, all games live on One Soccer.
Awesome. Can't wait to see how the rest of the season unfolds and see your coverage of it. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, mate. Always a pleasure. Keep up the fantastic work.
That is Christian Jack. Give him a follow at Christian Jack, and give CPL a follow at CPL Soccer. They got lots of great content coming out, both online and on social media, and it's just a good way to follow the league in between games and action. So I didn't ask this to John or KJ because I think they're answers made the answer of this hypothetical question self-evident. But I will ask you, not to put you on the spot.
You just want my soccer expertise.
I do, because for you, John Herdman's legacy is?
I think for me it'll always be that he, in my lifetime, took Team Canada to a World Cup. That's got to be what it is. Even I know they didn't go very far in the World Cup. They did score a goal. It's just that for in my lifetime, because what it was 36 years, is that right? Like since prior to this appearance, for the last appearance for Canada at the World Cup, I am younger than 36 years old, which means that I had never seen the Canada go to the World Cup. So that's kind of his lasting legacy. I have met him a couple times, and he is very personable. But even including that, when he's coming to the studio and so on, I think for me it'll always be the run-up to the World Cup, perhaps, because I was lucky enough to be at the Canada-Jamaica game where they qualified for the World Cup, and then the actual tournament itself, which was pretty fun to watch.
I think that's well said. I think for me, John Herdman is a ruthless opportunist. And I don't say that disparagingly. Right. I think, quite frankly, you know, John Herdman's player profile as a manager is a striker. You'd want him in front of goal, because whether it's leveling up on opportunity in terms of building the foundation of programs and then building the level of expectation within that program, you expect the same for yourself. And so I don't think it should be a surprise that as much as he built up the women's national team and made real relationships within that group, that as soon as he saw a better opportunity, he took it. And I don't think it's thus a surprise that as much as he was selling the dream of you can make history, 2026 World Cup in this country, imagine if we're flying as a soccer nation, what that'll mean. When he saw another opportunity, he took it. And I don't think that means that the opportunity, I don't think that means that the relationships he built moving up aren't real. This is someone who spoke at the funeral of Christine Sinclair's father. Like, he's clearly been able to make relationships with players, but I think that'll be his biggest task moving forward at TFC. And can you do that when the players are cycling in and out in our fluid, where when you're a national team manager, the bulk of your talent is not changing. You can't trade your center back if you don't like them to another nation. I mean, you could just not play them or not select them, but ultimately the elite talent pool on the men's and women's side isn't changing unless it's pushed from the youth levels. In team football, you've got man management, you've got squad football, where you have to use a huge selection of players to get through a season. And because of contracts, because of cap realities, who those people are that you're addressing are going to change. And so can you continue to build those relationships in a way that's authentic? I think for me, his legacy is someone who, at the end of the day, was about John Herdman And again, I don't think that's bad. I think the program was at a point where it needed someone who dreamt bigger than what it was or what it ever has been. And we're now at a point where his dreams are bigger than even leading this team onto the pitch in 2026. He'll be there when Canada plays, theoretically, at BMO in the World Cup in 2026. He'll just be in a suite with other people and not on the touchline. I think the biggest question is who fills that void in terms of who wants the job? And I think a lot of people will want it, but what will they need to hear to be assured that it's actually a job that they want? Because in any job interview for a high-profile position, both sides are kind of interviewing each other.
Sure.
But also, what will they need in terms of compensation, and is that something that Canada Soccer is going to be, one, able to do, two, willing to do, and three, is it prudent to do given the fact that you're in the midst of a multi-year ongoing fight with both your men's and women's team about the amount that you are willing to pay them?
Well, I do kind of wonder to that regard how much the kind of the mystery that surrounds the business aspect of the Canada Soccer business contract deal, you know, agreement, right? Whatever exists in that agreement, I do kind of wonder how much that will play into how much Canada Soccer can or is willing to offer any future head coach. And I actually kind of wonder, I don't know if we'll ever find out this answer, but I also kind of wonder if it did have any sort of impact. I'm sure it had at least a small one, but I kind of wonder what the size of that impact is on John Herdman's decision to leave in the first place. Like, maybe it was just time and he just decided that maybe MLSC also ponying up a sizable check more than Canada Soccer did. It's very possible that's a big part of the case as well. But I just do wonder, because we just don't know enough about the whole CSB deal. So I wonder how much that factors into it. But hey, you're right on one thing. You talk about the relationships John Herdman has fostered. About 15, 20 minutes ago, while we're recording this, Alfonso Davies, he tweeted out, it's a pretty simple thing. It was a picture of him and John Herdman, like, at a podium for a Canada Soccer avail, and they're both laughing. And the tweet reads, thank you for all you've done for Canada Soccer and for myself. Good luck on your future. So again like, perhaps a PR-ish tweet, right? It was a very like a AI looking tweet in terms of how he crafted it. But I mean, perhaps it speaks to Alfonso Davies' character a little bit that he sent it out in the first place. I don't know.
You think Alfonso is using Bing or ChatGPT to send a message?
Maybe.
Thank national team manager who's moving on.
I feel like it would take longer to write that prompt for ChatGPT than to just write it yourself.
Write that actual message? Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I am somewhat of a cynic, but often I wonder, did Alfonso Davies write that message, or did the person tied to his marketing agency who has the password to his accounts be like, ugh, it's been like 36 hours. None of the national team players said anything. Should we put out a statement? Yeah, it'll be very interesting moving forward to see how he's able to build those relationships and what that looks like.
Well, you also mentioned too, like, the relationship aspect of it. A big part of the storyline that's focused around TFC this past season, I remember so vividly, you talked to Kaylin Kyle, and I think the word she used to describe TFC was dumpster fire.
Oh, it was. Yeah. Yep.
which makes me laugh, but also makes me kind of sad as someone who likes to see TFC succeed. But like, some of the storylines over the past week include Lorenzo Insigne storming out of practice, and
again,
Bernardeschi not being happy with roles, and I wonder, like, how much of that can be solved in a relatively short period of time by any one guy. But then again, you made this point with both John and KJ. I mean, John Herdman has done that for both the men and women's national team. So perhaps it is something you can do. I don't know if it's easier to do at the club level, but he certainly has a bit of a track record there.
Well, I mean, if you sell them to clubs in Saudi Arabia, that solves it immediately.
This is true.
Is maybe one of the only locales that'll be willing to pick up the money left owing. The question for me, though, and you bring up Kyle's rant that she had, and it was quite epic. If you didn't hear it, scroll through the podcast feed, go back to that episode with Kaylin Kyle where she just went off on everything and everyone, and it was glorious. Unlike when you are a national team manager, you can't control the media in the same way as a club manager. And so if you're a national team manager, you can control the access that you get to the players and the team and to the events. You can't do that in the MLS or TFC. And so there will be scrutiny and there will be much more exposure. The amount of times he's going to have to talk to us as media goes up 25x.
Oh, yeah.
To what he did as a national team coach. And quite frankly, as a national team coach, you're looking to tell the story of the team and remind the country that, hey, remember us? We were away for a couple months, but we're someone that you should support. When you're a club manager, the media is a bit of an annoyance. So how he navigates that aspect of it and keeps, you know, the lovable, you know, John Herdman media character going will be interesting. I'm really fascinated. And again, I want to see who is selected as a national team manager first before I determine if this in the aggregate was positive for both sides or neutral or negative for both sides. But
I vote Sid. Let's get Sid in there
as the national team manager.
Yeah, let's get him in there.
Oh man, I don't want to see a national team manager have a heart attack after one half of football. Although watching FIBA basketball, there's a lot of managers in that tournament who have a little bit of Sid profile.
It's true,
you know, high level of gel in their hair, high level of intensity on the floor. So maybe Skipper Sid isn't a bad idea. This has been fun. Thanks for listening to Going Deep. Please like, share, favorite, subscribe to the podcast. And also make sure you follow Show because his stuff on social media, whether it's Jay's movies or otherwise, is much more interesting than mine. Thanks for listening.